Thank you, Brooke. Okay, so I'm Carrie. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons group. I am currently living in the disciplines of steps 10, 11, and 12. And I have a sponsor who is also a member of my home group. And she's not a past delegate and she's not a service circuit speaker. She is the same sponsor that I have had for the past 12 years. And I'm so grateful for her. And I'm not afraid to say that her name is Beth M. So I think that that's good for me to say my sponsor's name. So with that said, this a vision for you is a big chapter. It is a big chapter, not just the size and the amount of words and the amount of pages, but it is such an amazing chapter. And so before we go too far into it, and we've already read the first page on 151, and that was a good head start because that was a big page. But before we get too far into this, I'm just going to briefly describe what a vision for you is. It's a synopsis of all of the past 10 chapters previously, right? So as we go through it, and I'm not going to read every word, I don't have time to do that tonight. But as we go through it, you'll notice, oh, they're pretty much telling Bill's story again, right? Chapter one. Oh, now they're telling how, the recovery process works. And oh, now they're telling about two wives. And now they're telling, and that's how what this chapter is. It's a synopsis of every chapter previously. So the first chapter, right? The big Bill story. Is our program. Like that's where we get the program of action, everything in. The following chapters can be reconciled with Bill's story. And then this chapter, the other bookend, chapter 11, is what brings everything together and gives you a kind of a play by play. So, like I said, we're going to start at the bottom of page 151. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, "I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better. Having a better time," right? And we've heard of the pink cloud. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. Oh, keep coming back, kid, right? We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. Now, I laugh at that today, but honestly, when I was in my first year, going to lots of, 2 to 3 meetings a day on a pink cloud because I loved the fellowship. I was at every fellowship event, barbecue, speaker meeting, whatever. But yeah, I couldn't even walk down the beer aisle because inwardly, yes, I would kill to be able to get away with a few half a dozen drinks, right? So I get that. So he will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy with his sobriety. He cannot picture life with or without alcohol. I'm going to, so it's basically talking now about early recovery, right? And we're going to go through, and I wish I could read every word of this, but I'm just going to go through a few highlights because there's not a whole lot of time. You're going to meet these new friends. So how the 152, I'm skipping a little bit. How is this to come about, you ask? And it's talking about the fellowship and building a fellowship, right? Getting a home group. How, you ask? Where am I supposed to find these people? Well, you're going to meet these new friends in your own community. Highlight that. Near you. Highlight that. Alcoholics are dying helplessly, like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. This is why I really appreciate having a home group, 10 minutes drive from my house, and getting to sit next to my sponsor, shoulder to shoulder. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. I'm going to skip forward to page 154, about halfway down. Of course he couldn't drink. Okay, so now where we are right now is it's talking about Bill's story, right? So I told you it's kind of a synopsis of Bill's story. So he's talking, what the book is talking about, where we're picking up right now is Bill, Bill's in the lobby, right? The hotel lobby. And he just had a bad work deal and he's going, oh my gosh, like I can see the gay crowd in the hotel lobby. But of course he couldn't drink. But why not sit hopeful at a table, a bottle of ginger ale before him? After all, he had not been sober 6 months now. Perhaps he could handle, say, well, three drinks, no more. Fear gripped him because he knows better than that, right? This is a recovered alcoholic. And what is he thinking? Three drinks? Wait a minute. He was on thin ice. Again, it was that old insidious insanity of what? The first drink, right? Because the insanity comes before the first drink. The mental insanity, the mental, the insane thought is before we drink. And then the physical craving is after we take a drink. So with a shiver, he turned away and he walked down the lobby to the church directory. Music and gay chatter still floated to him from the bar. But what about his responsibilities? This is his sanity coming back, right? What about his responsibilities, his family, the men who would die because they would not know how to get well? There's a little bit of ego, right? Ah, yes, those other alcoholics. There must be many in this town. He would phone a clergyman. His sanity returned, right? And how did his sanity return? Because he turned his thoughts to someone else. He turned his thoughts to someone he could help. That has saved me so many times. And he thanked God, right? He turned his thoughts to someone he could help. And he asked God to help him to be useful, right? So selecting a church at random. So I'm going to skip a little bit forward because we know what happened with Bill and how he got in touch with Dr. Bob, and him and Dr. Bob, you know, had their meeting, and now there's two. Now there's two of them, right? So, but on page 156, halfway down, but life was still not easy for these two friends. Plenty of difficulties presented themselves. Both saw that they must keep spiritually active. I love that they use the word active here, not spiritually fit, because how do I become spiritually fit? How do I keep in fit spiritual condition? The maintenance, right? It's the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And maintenance is an action word. That's in, well, I'll just turn there real quick. Step 11, right before step 11, 10th step promises, page 90, 85, book. Okay. Yeah, because it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. That's what he's talking about here, right? And what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. So in order to maintain, and maintenance is an action word, you gotta action, and more action. So they gotta keep spiritually active. One day they called up the head nurse at a local hospital. They explained their need and inquired that if she had a first class alcoholic prospect. I love the wording here. She replied, "Oh yes, we've got a corker. He's just beaten up a couple of nurses, goes off his head completely when he's drinking, but he's a grand chap when he's sober, though he's been in here 8 times in the last 6 months. Good luck," you know, which is another highlight of mine. Understand, he was once a well-known lawyer in town, but now we've got him strapped down tight. Here was a prospect, all right, but by this description, none too promising. The use of spiritual principles in such cases was not so well understood as it is now. But one of the friends said, "Put him in a private room and we'll be down." And actually, and I don't know if it says this in here, probably not, it incomes of age, is that the private room was actually like a maintenance closet, like where the janitor put, you know, janitorial closet, right? So they cleared it out. They stuck his bed in there. And 2 days later, a future fellow of Alcoholics Anonymous stared glassily at the strangers beside his bed. "Who are you fellows? And why this private room? I was always in a ward before, but you know, they got a 12-step him, and that is usually done in private." So, said one of the visitors, "We're giving you a treatment for alcoholism." I just love the way this is worded. Hopelessness was written large on this man's face as he replied, "Oh, but that's no use. Nothing would fix me. I'm a goner. The last three times I got drunk on the way home from here. I'm afraid to go out the door. I can't understand it." For an hour, the two friends told him about their drinking experience. Three extremely important words. Let's dissect that. Their drinking, not his. They're not telling him about his. They're not pointing at their finger at him. They're talking about themselves. Second word, drinking, not thinking. Not feeling, not drug use. Their drinking experience. "When I drink, I get more thirsty. I don't get quenched." "Me too." "When I drink, I tell Lois I'm going to be home by 9 o'clock. And I'm not home until the next morning sometimes." "Me too." "When I drink, you know, you get the picture." So, and then their experience. Not their knowledge. They didn't read him a book. Experience, their drinking experience. Over and over, he would say, "That's me. That's me. I drank like that. That's the magic of me too," right? So they got him to nod his head. They got him to say, "Me too. That's me. I drank like that. Not I felt like that. Not I thought like that. Not I knew that information too. I drank like that." That magic of me too. The man in the bed was told of the acute poisoning from which he suffered, how it destroyed the body of an alcoholic and warps his mind. There was much talk about the mental state preceding the first drink. Right. So first they get him to go, "Oh my God, I drank like that. That happens physically to me too." And now they're talking about the mental obsession neck up that precedes that first drink. This is definitely how they're describing a 12-step call here. And then he says again, "Yes, that's me. That's me," said the sick man. "The very image. You fellows know your stuff all right, but I don't see what good it'll do. You fellows are somebody. I was once, but I'm nobody now. From what you tell me, I know more than ever now I can't stop." And this, both visitors, oh, at this, both visitors burst into laugh. Said the future fellow of Alcoholics Anonymous, "Damn little to laugh about that I can see." The two friends spoke of their spiritual experience. That's the third, right? First, they get him to be hopeless, bodily and mentally different. And now they're saying, but there's a solution. He interrupted, "I used to be strong for the church, but that won't fix it. I prayed to God on hangover mornings and swore I'd never touch another drop. But by 9 o'clock, I'd be boiled as an owl." Next day found the prospect more receptive. He had been thinking it over. "Maybe you're right," he said. "God ought to be able to do anything." Then he added, "He sure didn't do much for me when I was trying to fight this booze racket alone." So on the third day, the lawyer gave his life to the care and direction of his creator and said he was perfectly willing to do anything necessary. His wife came scarcely daring to be hopeful. Though she thought she had something different, or though she thought she saw something different about her husband already. He had begun to have a spiritual experience. That afternoon, he put on his clothes. Oh, I just got chills. And walked from the hospital a free man. Now, let's just recap. This man had been admitted 8 times in the past 6 months. 3 days prior, 2 men that are alcoholics came and 12-stepped this man. Fast forward 3 days, he walked from the hospital a free man. He entered a political campaign, making speeches, frequenting men's gathering places of all sorts, often staying up all night. He lost the race by only a narrow margin, but he had found God. And in finding God, he found himself. That was June 1935. He never drank again. Highlight that. That was June 1935, and he never drank again. 8 times in 6 months. 2 alcoholics come to visit him. 3 days later, he walks out of the hospital a free man, never to drink again. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. He too has become a respected and useful member of his community. He's helped other men to recover and is a power in the church from which he was long absent. I'm going to skip over to page 159. Almost to the middle of the page, these men had found something brand new in life. Though they knew they must help other alcoholics, if they were to remain sober, that motive, keeping sober, it became secondary. It was transcended by the happiness they found in giving themselves for others. I love that. That is my story. When I first started sponsoring, you know, the first time I went through the steps and the first time my sponsor said, you can start raising your hand to sponsor, I found myself a new sponsor. Like, I'm like, hell no, I'm not helping anybody. Don't you know who I think I am? Like, you know, and by the time my second and then my third and final sponsor, the sponsor I've had for the past 12 months or 12 years said the same thing. You know, I started sponsoring. I'll be honest. I started sponsoring because I had to, not because I wanted to. I started sponsoring because they told me that I had to, if I was to stay sober, I had to give it away to keep it. That is not why I sponsor today. That is not why I go to meetings today. That is not why I have a home group today. That is not why I'm in AA today. It's not so that I can stay sober. Originally, yeah, I came out of fear. I stay out of love. I came here out of fear. I stay here out of love. Out of love and out of no longer out of necessity. That's been transcended by the happiness I find in giving myself to Alcoholics Anonymous and to the women that I can help. Page 159, still. Okay, so they shared their homes, their slender resources, and I love this part. They shared their homes, their slender resources, and gladly devoted their spare hours to fellow sufferers. Gladly, right? It's not something I have to do anymore. It's something I get to do. Same with meetings. Meetings aren't something I have to do. They're something I get to do. I get to be part of a great whole. I get to be a small part of a great whole. They were willing by day or night to place the new man in the hospital and visit him afterwards. They grew in numbers. They experienced a few distressing failures, but in those cases, they made an effort to bring the man's family into a spiritual way of living, thus relieving much worry and suffering. Now, this was in 1935, okay? Remember. Now, the next paragraph starts out, a year and 6 months later, these 3 had succeeded with 7 more because they were a rapidly growing fellowship. So it's been a year and 6 months later. Let's think about this for a minute. This is going to describe a home group, not a meeting. 2 entirely different things. This is where the big book describes what a home group is and what a home group is for. The next line says, seeing much of each other, scarce an evening passed that someone's home. And no, it's not, home group isn't called home because they met in somebody's home. That's not the case. That's just some dumb pun. It's not, it's just a coincidence. But let's not let that sidetrack us like it did just now for me. Okay. So seeing much of each other, scarce an evening passed that someone's home did not shelter a little gathering of men and women happy in their release and constantly thinking of how they might present their discovery to some newcomer. Those are business meetings, you guys. Those are business meetings. They were having business meetings every night. And then in addition to these casual get-togethers, it became customary to set apart one night a week for a meeting. A meeting is not nearly as important as a business meeting, as a committee meeting, as those meetings that the casual get-togethers where the members come and they discuss happy in their release. How are we going to carry this message? Right? The committee meetings that are H&I or CPC or public information. And how are we going to do this? How are we going to get the hospitals the information? How are we going to get the sober living houses the information? How are we going to 12-step the newcomer? What should our newcomer packets look like? Like, these are the things that they were doing 7 times more often than they were just going to a meeting. So once a week, they set aside time for a meeting to be attended by anyone interested in a spiritual way of life, aside from, for a meeting to be attended by anyone interested in a spiritual way of life. This is 1937. Aside from fellowship and sociability, the prime object was to provide a time and a place where new people might bring their problems, right? Like when I pull up to my home group, I sit out in my car and I pray. And now it's pretty quick prayer because it's been the same one for a while. But before I get out of my car at my home group, and I've had people knock on my window, hey, what are you doing in there? It's like, I'm preparing to go into my home group. And what I'm doing is I'm praying and I'm saying, you know, God, please help me to leave all my Cadillac problems in this car. They're going to be here when I get back. This meeting is not for me to bring my problems. I am not a new person. Please help me to go in there. And instead of catching up with my sponsees and asking how my sponsor's doing and joking around with my friends and taking Davy's hat or whatever, please help me to make sure that I'm here doing your work, that I'm looking for the person that I don't know. I'm looking for the new person in Alcoholics Anonymous to welcome them to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm looking for the person who might be coming back after a relapse and is scared and shaking and is the worst day of their life. I'm looking for the person who's maybe there because their parent is in hospice in Bend and they're visiting to say goodbye and all they need is a meeting and they need to be with their people. I want to be the one to say welcome. Sit by me, have a cup of coffee. And that's my job at my home group. And I have to do that in my car. I have to remind myself. I have to recenter myself. I'm not here, you know, to get. I'm here to give. The next page talks about AA's first Alano Club, right? AA's first, the first AA clubhouse. And it's a pretty cool story. And I don't have time tonight to go into that. So I'm going to skip down to the bottom of page 160. The very practical approach to his problems, the absence of intolerance of any kind, the informality, the genuine democracy app. Sorry, guys, that's my traditions highlights. Those are my tradition highlights. I used the wrong color pen. Steps. 162, bottom of 162. Thus we grow, and so can you. I hate to talk about this twice in one day. I shared this at a meeting earlier. After I recovered in Alcoholics Anonymous, after I recovered, I got very judgmental very quick of everyone else who has not recovered. I fell in love with the big book. I never knew that the problem could be removed. I thought I was going to have to live with this desire to drink one day at a time, white knuckling it from one meeting to the next for the rest of my life. And I was under that impression for a very long time in AA. And so once that problem had been removed, once I saw the miracle that this book offers, you know, it's hard to keep your mouth shut. I'll tell you that much. Like Tillamook mudslide ice cream, right? It's very difficult to have Tillamook mudslide ice cream in your freezer. And if somebody comes over, I mean, today I'm not going to make you have a whole bowl, but you're damn well going to try a bite. You got to try a bite. I mean, it's really good, you know? And so once you have this spiritual awakening, it's like, you want to give it away to everybody, right? And people don't like that. They want it when they want it, not when I want them to have it. And I started feeling very alone in the fellowship that I was once a very big part of, my local community in AA. And I maybe I was alienating myself, but nobody had a big book. Nobody, you know, and I started going through the traditions and, oh my gosh, there's a whole nother level of arrogance that started flooding in. And I'm like, everybody's doing everything wrong. And I can't do this. That my people aren't here. There's no big books. There's no traditions. And I'm sure that no one in this room can identify with anything that I'm saying. But I had this, I had this feeling of defeat and just like, I can't do this. I go away on these conferences and I see the AA I want and I see my people. So one day at Jackson's Corner, I'm sitting with my sponsor and I'll never forget. I had just put my house on the market and the realtor had been there that day. I was going through a divorce. I'm just done. I'm going to sell everything. And I'm telling her, I'm going to go house shopping. I have a trip planned to Las Vegas. I'm going to join the Connect the Dots group or the West Portland group. I'm moving to Portland. I have all these home groups planned out, Atlanta group. I have all these groups that I'm going to go check out the housing around there, you know, and I'm going to go move and I'm going to be with my people. I want to be with people who love the book like I love the book. And my sponsor, probably speaking to my ego, said, "Oh, but Carrie, who's going to carry the message to us?" And I said, you know, who's going to carry the message in our community? And I'm like, what do you mean? And she goes, well, if you're going to go carry the message to a bunch of people who already have the message, right, then who's going to carry the message here? And I'm like, oh my God, that's right. I'm their only hope. But for real, like, I mean, it made sense, right? It made sense. And I said, but how? And she tells me, one alcoholic at a time. And she's had to continue telling me that, you know, and Stephanie and I were just talking about that a little earlier today, you know, and it's one alcoholic at a time. I can't go into a group and tell them that they're doing it wrong. I can't go, but, you know, and another mentor of mine, and he's passed on by now. He told me, and I didn't get it for the first couple of years, but he told me, you know, kid, because I'm trying to 12 step all these old timers and change their ways and whatever. And he's like, it's easier to give birth than to raise the dead. And so I get that now, right? And I'm like, so what I did was, I was a one-man army and I just started sponsoring everybody. You know, I just started sponsoring everybody and carrying the message so that other people could have the message and then I won't be alone. And when that day at Jackson's Corner, she had me open my book and it was not the book I have right now. So it's not the same original highlight, but she had me open the book and this is the part we read together. Thus we grow and so can you. This is on the bottom of page 162 going into 163. Though you be but one man with this book in your hand, we believe and hope it contains all you will need to begin. She said, you build it and they will come. And I got me a minivan, even though I only have one kid. And I packed that minivan, you know, I just did it. I just did it the night before last. We're still doing it. We go 3.5 hours over to Portland. I pack my car with newcomers. I've been doing it for over 10 years. And I take them and I show them AA, you know, and I take them and I teach them AA. And one by one, this is what happened. We know what you're thinking. You are saying to yourself, but I'm jittery and alone. I couldn't do that. But you can. You forget that you have just now tapped a source of power much greater than yourself to duplicate with such backing that we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. And a lot of tears, blood, sweat, and tears. But nothing worthwhile is ever going to be easy. This book tells me that I need to create the fellowship I crave, not go find the fellowship I seek. And I was really good at reading the white instead of the black words on the white page in the blue book. And it doesn't say anywhere that I need to go find the fellowship I seek. I'm not going to move away to go and be with a bunch of people who already have the message. I need to create the fellowship I crave. Page 164. Still, you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write the book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your reliance is always upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. My sponsor is not my higher power. She doesn't pretend to be. But when I sat there, jittery and alone, because I'm but one man with this book in my hand, and told her that I was going to move away to be with, to go and find the fellowship I seek, she guided me back to God. She guided me back to my higher power through the wording in this book that has the answers to all of my problems. These spiritual principles that can be found in the pages of this book have the answers to all of my problems inside of AA and outside of AA. And the words on this page, you know, they mean more and more to me as the years go by. And it wasn't an overnight matter, you know? Like I said, it's difficult creating something, but anything worthwhile is going to take some time. Anything that happens overnight, it's not sustainable. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Every morning for the past 10 years, I've woke up, and before I even get out of bed, before I start my morning meditation, and this is not part of it, I say, God, I'm checking in for duty. What will you have me to today? What will you have me be? Please help me to stay on this path, creating the fellowship I crave. Please help me to be the best soldier to Alcoholics Anonymous that I can possibly be today. And I abandon myself to God. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you to District 6 for having me and for letting me share this book with you these past 13 weeks.
All audio and video files on the District6AA.org website or the District 6 in Area 15 YouTube channel are for personal use only. Reproduction, distribution, and commercial use are not permitted. In accordance with District 6 current practice, no faces are shown in our videos and audio is scrubbed for anonymity prior to publishing. Contributors whose voices are heard have given record and release consent. Opinions expressed by the presenter are their own and do not necessarily represent the group conscience of District 6 as a whole.